far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, get ready and get suited for our review of Hathaway's Flash and the Book of Boba Fett. Down a little bit. How do you sound?
Is it working now? Just one channel or two? Or
no, it's fine now. So we're good.
Okay. Good.
All right. We haven't done this in a couple months.
I guess it's been about 1.5 months because we saw Spider-Man on New Year's Day.
I did. Well, I know we recorded it like around New Year's is what I remember, and I've been really just taking my time editing that because you had so many audio issues, and I'm just like, gosh, it's going to be such a slog to try to edit through all this, and I've been doing it, like, when I have a chance at work to do it, but I'm trying to get that done, and we might as well just combine two episodes into one and then call it a 3-month break again.
Oh, all right, well. That'll probably take even longer to release then, though, because you're going to have to edit this one, and I'm sure there'll be problems with that.
Don't just count us out just yet, Padre. No. We just started.
Well, I'm just not real confident, because when I tried to start up Netflix earlier, I was having all those issues, and then that makes me think that my connection's not great today. But then it played fine once I was streaming. I mean, it didn't seem to
buffer. Yeah, you actually sound pretty good now, so...
It does show 3 green bars, so I guess it's a good connection.
Yeah. Well, I think I was having internet issues that night. Like, I had... It maybe wasn't so much internet issues, it was Discord issues. Like, I think I tried Discord the other day, and it was like, oh, due to maintenance or something, or they had, like, a giant server, the server's being down for, like, a good amount of time, and then eventually everything came back up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
All right, so...
So this time we're actually reviewing an anime, the Gundam Hathaway movie.
Yeah, it's been like a few months since we talked about an anime on this anime podcast that we're supposed to be consistently talking about anime on here, and whoops, my bad.
I was thinking we could also talk about Boba Fett, though, since you've seen it right?
Yes. Oh, God, we got to talk about... We're going to be here a while. Yeah, we got to talk about Star Wars... And so much has happened in the world regarding, I guess, maybe, perhaps, we're going to war with Russia, maybe, perhaps not, who knows. The Chris Chan letters, I was going to rant about Nick Rakita ranting about that podcast from Monica Real and what's her name? About the Vic stuff.
Jamie Marchi,
about they want to bring up old crap from 3 years ago that I thought everyone has an opinion on it. That's what it is. Vic is still out there in LA working, doing, and going to cons. Nothing has changed, and yet we still need to go back and recap and have a third-year anniversary to talk about how they felt and how they acted like utter bitches on social media for that period of time. Because it's all right there. Anyways, that's... Maybe we'll
I felt the need to listen to their podcast. I just saw their description.
Oh, no.
Like, talk about being harassed by trolls because we spoke out against Vic or whatever.
No, it's... Here's the thing. So, like, I have to watch it with some commentary. I didn't quote Monica Rial because I just copied the link of the Twitter. And my spot was like, well, if you watch these people give commentary on, this is what she's saying, commentary on YouTube about our podcast, you're giving them money, you know that. You're going to be supporting them and how evil they are, and we're the good ones. And my only response is, well, I like giving money to pure good quality work. And, you know, I knew when I saw that podcast, I was like, there's no way I'm going to listen to this. I know exactly how it is. And then Nick Rakita decided to play it on his stream, which Daft told us about. And I was like, well, if I'm going to get any kind of commentary, it's going to be from him. And it's bad, not even 5 seconds in. And my stomach literally churns hearing them talk. And it seems so fake and so scripted. But if that's what people want to listen to, that's up to them. But I sure like Nick's commentary. And the thing is, with Nick Rakita getting money, people donate to him. I don't know if he does. I guess some ads come up. But here's the thing with Monica's statement. She acts like it's bad. Like, oh, we're not making any money off of this. Well, the podcast was promoted on Anime News Network. You know what Anime News Network is full of? Advertisements. You know what advertisements are about? Money. And you know who wrote up the article to promote that podcast? Lindsay Leverage. The one who broke the whole story in the first place. Someone's getting money out of this one way or the other. Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, it's all bullshit. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, these people making videos about Vic were monetized or whatever. And they just don't like that any of their enemies can make money. That's one of their big things, is like censoring or removing people that criticize them from the internet.
There's a weeb civil war between the anti-tubers and the people that are like diehard part of that side of KickVic/Anime News Network fans. It's those two, because the people that are anti-tubers do not like ANN and vice versa.
That's true.
Yeah, that based on my observation, watching all of this unfold for the past 3 years, and just not caring. So
I mean, this is just a typical internet tactic, is you just call your enemy like a grifter or whatever, and then that's supposed to somehow discredit what they say because, like, money is bad or whatever. You know, it's not substantive.
It's funny how, like, they're saying their critics, which, you know, is Nick Rakita, they're like, oh, you know, his opinions don't matter. This is, like, bitch, this man does law. This man knows what he's talking. He knows more about law than I do. What do you know? You know how to do voice acting for a cartoon character. If you think you need to, like, listen to it, but you can't stomach it by itself, and you need some commentary to supplement and offset what they're saying, then give Nick Rakita's reviews a try. I'm not throwing any money to endorse him. I'm sure as heck not getting paid. I don't want him to know that I said anything like this. But I'm just saying, that's what I was impressed with, how he took it, which is, you know, how you expect. If for people that, like, don't like any of this, and they want to at least hear it, but they got to have some help and someone hold their hand through the process of clicking play on that podcast, go to Nick Rakita. That's my bit right there. So,
yeah.
Oh gosh.
I have to wonder, how many episodes can they do on just this one subject?
They've only done one. That came out last month in January. Just one.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there going to be a 2 6 months from now? I don't know.
Yeah, they might release more episodes than we do, all about this one subject. But they have 10 years to catch up on us. How many episodes do you think we've recorded between all the podcasts?
It's over 200. I mean, we did 50, and then 20-some on the other, and the one in the middle. And now I'm working on... Oh, what number am I working on for podcasting? I got the WordPress editor pulled up. 163. So This is supposed to be for Spider-Man, but we might as well say, ah, the hell with it. Throw Gundam in there. Why not?
Do you want to do Gundam first or Boba Fett first?
Let's do Gundam. Okay. Because I think with Boba Fett, there's stuff I want to talk about that too, so.
Yeah.
So anyways, Well, if I'm bundling this episode to the Spider-Man one, we did introductions in that. It's the same people talking. You're not missing much.
Yeah, vice versa, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah, no other introductions.
Don't matter. None of this matters. So Gundam Hathaway's Flash, this came out last summer. We now just watched it today, at least for me the first time.
Yeah, I never saw it before.
Okay, so we're both in the, you know, like, virgins to this film.
Yeah, and my understanding is there is a manga, and that is being translated by the Xionic Republic's fan site.
Oh, yeah, Xionic Translations.
Yeah, and I've downloaded some of it, but I haven't gotten around to reading it yet, so that story's all new to me.
I hope it gets an official release from Vertical someday. I don't know, because I would read that. I say that, and yet I have my Gundam the Origin manga that I've had for years, and that stack I bought from VQ a few years ago, and I'm still stuck on Volume 5 for the past 10 years.
That was like the past arc, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better finish that. There's like 12 volumes, and it is a great manga.
Oh, no, I mean, the first 4.5, I mean, and what I read of 5 is good, but it's like I've seen the animated version of, you know, Gundam the Origin, which is they adapted what 5 through 8 or something or 7. So then it's like I'm like I still need to read it though.
Yeah, it is worth it just to see the artwork because it is distinct from the way that it's drawn in the anime. Although I think the anime was pretty good too. I know some people didn't like it because of CGI or whatever, but I thought that both versions are great.
I had no issue with that anime whatsoever. I don't care about how the CGI looks. It's the storytelling is magnificent and that's really what should matter.
And there's some interesting stuff in the back of those books too, because I remember they did interviews where they talk about other manga, like they even talk about One Piece at one point. And they kind of were like, you know, it's not like the best drawn anime or the best story, but you know, it's popular because it involves friendship, I guess. But you know, it's kind of funny that they, I guess, trashed Oda a little bit. But you know, Gundam the Origin is a lot more detailed than One Piece in the way it's drawn. I mean, One Piece is kind of
no doubt. And speaking of One Piece, it's back on Toonami. And
that's true.
Yeah, I've been recording it. So I have One Piece and Shenmue to record off Toonami. So for the first time in like 3 years, I give a crap about Toonami.
Yeah, Shenmue, you saw the first episode today, right?
Yeah, I did. It seems like they're incorporating all three games into the storyline. So then I'm like, shoot, I need to play and beat the third game. Because I started on that 2 years ago.
I've only played the first one, so it seemed to me like it was mainly adapting that, but you said they had stuff from the other games in it, too.
Like, if you get a PS4 at some point, you can at least get the Shenmue 1 and 2 collection, so then you have a way to play 2.
Well, I do have 2. It's just, I don't know how well my Xbox works, because the 360 got the Red Ring of Death, but I was able to revive it by wrapping it in a paper, in a towel and heating it up to melt the thermal paste again. But you know, I haven't used it in a while, so I don't know if the 360 will even play it, because I know there's some original Xbox games that won't play.
Oh, that's true.
And then I have an original Xbox too, but it's kind of finicky too, and a lot of discs it won't play as well. So maybe I just need to get a new original Xbox, because I do have Nintendo 2 for Xbox.
I think you remember you telling me the story about the Xbox, but it's been like a few years since you've done like this trick about wrapping it in a towel. It's like making the Xbox a burrito in order for it to work.
Yes, I did that like one time, and it did work. But I think it's kind of dangerous to do that regularly, because you don't know if it's going to like catch on fire or something.
That's true, yeah. Unless you wrap it in like fireproof towel or something, then it just like, oh shoot, it's still going to be bad regardless.
Yeah.
Don't listen to me.
Yeah. But I probably could just play it in my original Xbox. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I did with the second game, with me going through, and that, of course, took a number of years to play Shenmue 2 also.
I was thinking about getting, like, a version from the UK or something and trying to play in my Dreamcast, but then I think someone told me in the chat, though, that the Dreamcast is region locked or something like that.
It is. You would have to get a swap disk and use, like, I think swap magic was what it is. But, like, if you use the swap disk trick, you're going to be ruining your laser in the Dreamcast. I think if you do it all the time consecutively, like, eventually you will wear out the motor and the laser in it. But if you're just using it to play one game, you should be okay. I mean, but also the fact that, like, there's probably a way to, like, insert a mod chip to make it region free. If it's something easy to do that you can, if you want to spend the time to do it or find someone that can, like, hey, can I pay you to just turn my Dreamcast into a region free Dreamcast so I can play Shenmue from Europe?
Yeah, I was asking on the chat about, like, the PAL and NTSC and all that shit. Like, you know, shouldn't there just be a simple adapter you can use to make, like, a European Dreamcast play here? But I guess TY said it's, like, expensive or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you would think that would be a kind of a basic thing, because it's, like, all European appliances use some sort of different electrical current or something, right?
Yeah, so they do. They got, like, different outlets and stuff. They're weird.
Yeah. I remember I was in Italy Italy and Austria. I went there during high school for my cousin's wedding.
Yeah.
And they had these different plugs in the wall, different shapes. So, like, your phone charger or whatever, or, like, the Model 1 iPhone in, like, 2008. It's, like, it's not going to work, you know? So I had to get, like, a different kind of charger or something like that.
You have to get, like, an actual, like, multi-adapter power adapter that, like, I've seen one. We get these people that work for these factories in town. And I know one guy left behind, like, this, like, it looks like a giant circle. I might have it somewhere, but, like, you can change the adapters of what electronics can go in. So you can hook it up to the wall. But then it comes with, like, this round ring that's basically different number of adapters on it, depending on what you're trying to plug in. So that's something like that would be really handy to use.
Mm-hmm. So lately I've been playing, like, I have been playing at the Hotel Dusk games. And the second one only came out internationally. It didn't come out in the U.S. So I bought a U.K. copy. And I put it in the DS, like the original DS, and it'll play. But then you try to do it in the 3DS, and it won't work.
Hmm.
And then I also got a fan translation of Miles Edgeworth 2, because that was one that was never released in the U.S., only in Japan. But somebody did a full translation and put it on a cartridge and sold it on eBay, so I bought that. And that's the same way. It'll only play in the original DS.
Hmm.
The 3DS, I guess it can tell if something's not an official cartridge or if it's from another region.
I think,
because, you know, it'll play normal official, like, Nintendo DS games from the US, but it won't do these other games.
I think the 3DS was region locked. I don't know why they did it that way, because the DS was not. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually surprising that the DS was not, because when you think about it, Nintendo tends to region lock things. And, I mean, even, like, when you go back to, like, the SNES and NES and stuff, they have those little pins in there to try to...
Yeah, which is so stupid. I don't think the Switch is region-locked, or am I wrong?
I believe that's true, that the Switch is not region-locked.
Yeah, they finally learned after 25 years.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a game, like, a Dragon Quest collection of the first three games that's... It says it's, like, Worldwide Edition or something like that. When I see it listed on Amazon, I'm tempted to get it. But, like, you know, it's always kind of, with Nintendo, you never know what's going to happen. But I guess with Switch, you can do games from any region. And I think this game has, like, a lot of different languages listed. It's kind of surprising they would do it like that, because, you know, in the past they've been so territorial about these things. And then there's a lot of games they just... sit on, you know, like Mother 3, they supposedly have a translation of that.
Yeah.
And then they just did some trailer a couple days ago. We're putting Mother 1 and 2 on the Nintendo Switch eShop subscription service. If you pay us every month, you can play these games.
Oh, so that's how you have to get it, is if you use their subscription service. And not just regular on the eShop, you can pay once and then play it whenever you want to.
Right, because that's the model they had for the Wii and the Wii U, is they had a normal eShop where you could just buy the games. But then with the Switch, they have this ridiculous thing where they have two tiers of membership, and like you can either pay them like 20 a year to play NES and SNES games, or 50 a year to play those games plus N64 and Genesis, which they've just added. And,
yeah,
but it's like, come on.
And the library's limited too.
Right. And I probably have most of the games anyway, and I can just play them on the old systems, and it'll feel more legit anyway. I mean, I'd rather play an N64 game on the N64 weird controller and all, just because that's the that's the nostalgic experience of an N64.
Right.
And you're not going to get a great graphical improvement playing an N64 game on a Switch. I mean, I guess Mario 64, when they did that re-release, it looked okay, but I mean, it's still like super polygonal and stuff. You're never going to have it like really be HD.
Speaking of region stuff, I bought a region free Blu-ray player off eBay, and I think what somebody did is like some tech place in Illinois like takes Sony Blu-ray players and they mod them to play region free stuff. So now I can basically pop in. So like I bought that toy anime that we reviewed many years ago. So that had a Blu-ray release over the summer, and they just put out the standard edition like recently in Japan. And I really wanted it because I saw like a file for it online and how wonderfully beautiful it looks upscaled for that OVA. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It is worth the $60. I am going to get this. And it does come with the soundtrack, but then again, I have the soundtrack already that I bought from like Shiryuga like a couple months ago. So I have like two copies of the soundtrack to that anime, and then like the anime itself. And there's no special features in it or anything. There's no like an interview with a creator or anything like that. It's just basically a straightforward like you pop it in, and then like the chapter selections are like when the songs play, and then it takes you straight to the part in the anime where the song plays, and that's basically it. It's a really bare bones release, but it looks really, really good on Blu-ray. But then I can also play my other stuff that, like, last year I bought, like, the Italian edition of F, the Formula One anime that I need to watch. But I bought the second part of that on eBay, because the first part is stupidly ridiculous in price online. But now I can use that to watch Italian anime DVDs. And then I got some stuff from, like the Soul Bianca DVD set from the UK, like, a couple months ago. And then I popped that in, and that's also, like, you know, a standard bare-bones release. But they had some information like the character profiles and image gallery, things like that.
Is it English
dub? It is not English dub. It's basically they took the ADV subtitles with like the black bar with the white text inside of it and just threw that on a DVD. There's no dub to it.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know why. But I now have Soul Bianca on DVD, VHS, and Laserdisc on three different formats.
So is there no official English DVD in America of it?
No, they never did. They just did the VHS tapes. I don't know why.
Yeah. Probably ADV, like the license lapse or something.
More than likely, yes. I'm hoping Discotech picks up that series one day. Someone gets a hold of it. I mean,
yeah, it's bound to happen eventually.
Yeah, it sucks that, like, I think it deserves a redub, personally. But, I mean, it depends on, like, there's, like, the weird fans like me. There's probably five in total, I'm assuming, that care about Soul Bianca and wouldn't mind if they got a redub. And the rest of us is like, you know, that's cool. I'll spend the $15-$20 from Discotech on a sale to get it and get a bare-bones release and be happy. I was like, if you just get it in 1080, that'd be great. I don't know. Yeah, it depends on wherever those masters are.
I don't think Discotech would go out of their way to redub something if it's already got a dub. They like to use the old dub.
They do, but if there's an anime that they feel it's going to be feasible and they're going to get like a good number of people pre-ordering it and it's going to offset the cost, they will. And I thought they did that with one other thing, but it could be something else.
Isn't it going to be challenging to even find the dub? Like, isn't it lost media?
The dub, I mean, I think ADV still might have it. Matt Greenfield probably has it in his, like, his house in Hawaii somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. He's probably going to be the one to coordinate like where stuff is at. He probably took everything with him, and it just sits in a garage.
But you can't find the dub on the internet, right?
I'm the one that put the dub on the internet like 3 years ago.
Oh, that's right. You did. You did release it on MySpring, didn't you? Or something?
I did on there, but I did it on YouTube, and YouTube has not taken it down. Not yet. But then that shows, like, who's going to have the rights to, like, come at me to take the dub down? Obviously, no one from ADV has, or Matt Greenfield, or no one.
They don't have it anymore. Yeah,
and I think no one in Japan has the rights now.
Once Discotech gets the show, they're going to, like, they're going to download the dub off YouTube, and then they're going to
They could just reach out to me, and I'll just send them my VHS copy. Like, they can use the audio from that. And then just, like, yeah. Justin Savakis can just, like, run it through some audio wizardry, like, black magic shit, and, like, make it 5.1. I don't know. Like, if they can just reach out to me, like, we like to use your audio, and I'm like, here, have at it. Just go. I'm glad to help with the project. Just credit me for it. I'm good. Let me get a free release and a nice, cool poster, and we'll call it even.
Yeah.
In a perfect world. I mean, like, yeah, Discotech is the one hunting people down for, like, we need more lost episodes of Ninja Robots dub. Does anyone have any recordings of it? We'll gladly use it for a release. I don't know if they got it all, but I think they, hopefully they got nearly all of it.
Well, last I heard there was, like, they had all the episodes, but one of the episodes they're missing a minute or two of audio. And they were considering recording their own audio for that 1 or 2 minutes of it.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah, I think that's probably what's going to end up happening. Cause,
I thought they... Like, no, they just put it out on Blu-ray, I thought.
Maybe that is what ended up happening. I don't know if they actually found the complete or not. But,
I don't know. They were really desperate. I mean, I think they've tried to reach out to Jason DeMarco at Cartoon Network for that. You know, I know we're supposed to be talking about Gundam, but I really don't care. I mean, we can just do 45 minutes of closing remarks before we get into Gundam.
Opening remarks. Yeah.
Opening remarks.
There was that rumor that Ninja Robots aired on Cartoon Network, and it's kind of like,
yeah,
iffy, because, like, I found 2 IMDb or maybe even 3 reviews that all claimed that they had all seen it on Cartoon Network, but well, they were all written in the same distinct style of, like, this really overly enthusiastic autistic style that you sometimes see of somebody who has false memories. We've seen this recently with a certain individual we've recently encountered known as the Swayzat girl, who passively posts on multiple accounts about the tsunami trapped in hyperspace event.
Oh, you're not real girlfriend? I know that's mean, but I can't help
it. Yeah, this is a hilarious story. The total immersion event from tsunami in 2002. And now, I remember watching this event when I was a kid, and, you know, we're talking about it with other kids at recess and stuff. And, yeah, it seems cool, like there's a villain now on Tsunami, you know, he's some computer virus. But overall, this event is, it's really very little. I mean, it's like, they had 1 minute per day of this, and the Swayzat character does not even appear in all the episodes. Mm-hmm. I think he's only in 3 or 4 out of the 5 episodes, and he's defeated off-screen. And you can see a YouTube video of all his appearances in total, and it totals up to less than 1 minute. It's like 40 seconds of him speaking.
Yes.
And this girl is, like, super obsessed with this really minor Toonami character. And, like, yeah, he's got a cool, like, CGI robot design, whatever. But, like, she's, like, got a fetish for this guy. And they're talking about, like, sex ed VHS tapes or something on MySpling. And she starts getting horny, saying, like, the word body makes me think about Tom and Swayzak and the total immersion of that.
Oh, God. Yeah, I remember. Oh, jeez, I remember that.
So this girl, I go on the MySpling server because I'm thinking about, you know, digitizing my tapes or whatever. And I start talking about a VHS tape that I'm watching. So I've got a tape here. It says Popeye, Superheroes, something like that. So it's got a super chunk of Popeye from the 1998 on Cartoon Network, and then it's got Fantastic Four, Superman, Batman, and she starts quizzing me down about the tape, like what characters are in the episodes, and she's all curious about Superman because she's had a crush on Brainiac. She's obsessed with these robots, and
she's a robosexual.
Yeah, so she keeps. Then she starts messaging me constantly about Brainiac's voice and telling me, like,
yes.
Do you prefer Brainiac's Injustice voice or his DCIU voice? And how do you prefer to Swayzat's voice? And Swayzat's voice in the online mini game? And how would you rate Swayzat's voice on a 1 to a 10 sexiness scale? Like, I think I tolerated it for like a weekend and then I stopped responding to her. But, you know, she just obsessively was quizzing me down about the mini game, which is apparently lost. It's a very simple, like, flash space shooter mini game that was on the web 20 years ago. But she seemed to think it was like a big cinematic experience where you go inside Tom. And she kept messaging me, like, what was inside of Tom like? How did you go inside him? I have to play this game so I can go inside Tom. She's like getting off to the idea of this 20-year-old mini game. And then eventually,
I know that was messaging, like, she would rant, she would message me, but I would not respond. And after things like the fifth attempt, she stopped. So far.
Yeah. At one point, she asked me to draw Swayzak. from the online game, and I drew kind of like a very simple illustration, and she was like, oh my god, that looks nothing like him. I'm going to get Greg Capullo, the artist of Spawn, to draw turn him into
an entire hero. She's gonna hire Seth MacFarlane to draw this.
Yeah,
no, get Rob Liefeld, he'll do anything, I think. Yeah. He'll get Swayze like to stand on his tippy toes with like veins popping out of his arms and crap. Oh, good stuff.
But eventually I stopped responding to her, and then she started messaging me directly in the MySpleen server. And so I contacted the admins and told them, like, this girl is like messaging me and my friends like obsessively. And we're not even responding to her.
I feel harassed.
And then they were like, okay, yeah, she has to go. And she hasn't appeared since. So I think they've gotten rid of her.
I hope so, yeah.
She was so freaking annoying.
Well, you played into her, and I'm just thinking, John, this ain't going to go good for you, man. And like, 2 days in, like, I'm so sick and tired of this chick.
Yeah. It was funny at first, because she'd get really obsessive and start ranting in all caps. And she started doing that again at the end there. And then Daft informed me that she told him that she was on her period and that he should tell me this, that this is why she's acting this way or something. It's like, she's been doing that the whole time I've known her.
She's on period 24/7. I don't know how women work. Speaking of Ninja Robots, it is on Right Stuff for $60. So they did put it out.
Oh, by the way, this girl, she's been on the internet since like the 2000s. Daft found out that she has like a Kiwi Farms post about her, and then also the Kiwi Farms post then links to her Encyclopedia Dramatica page. Apparently she got on DeviantArt when she was like 7 years old. And her mind got fucked by reading Sonic the Hedgehog fanfics about Metal Sonic kidnapping Sally or something. It turned her into a robosexual.
Oh my gosh.
That's why you don't let your children use the internet at age 7.
No crap. Yeah. No kidding. You know, it's interesting how you got all these like parent groups that are like, the dangers of social media for kids. How about the dangers of the internet, period, for kids? I'm so glad I didn't discover the internet until I was like actually a teenager. So, there you have it. Which is a smart thing to do.
Oh, the other weird thing is that she's obsessed with some sort of like Nickelodeon stores that existed in malls from like 98 or 99 or something like that.
Yeah.
And like, she went to this mall and where they previously had a Nickelodeon store, and she went to the store, which is been converted now into some other type of store, and she started like quizzing down the clerks there, and they were like, I don't know about the details of what this store was before I was even born, because these clerks are like teenagers and college students and stuff, And she was like, wants them to tell them all about what kind of merchandise was stocked in the Nickelodeon store at this mall in 1998. And then she gives them like her, some sort of like card or something. And they say, like, contact me at this number and tell me if you find out anything about the history of this store. She's like so obsessed with this stuff.
They
like,
are not going to give two shits. It is above their pay grade. They do not care.
No. Yeah. And I looked into like this Nickelodeon store thing because I never even heard of it. I mean, apparently they were like trying to copy the Disney store or something, and it lasted like 1 year.
I mean, there was one. It depends on where they were. I mean, Disney stores were everywhere in the mall in the 90s. I mean, they're still out there too. I think I was in one a few years ago. Anyways, but the Nickelodeon store might have been something I walked into one time. I mean, depending on where I lived and if it was there. And if not, it's no big deal.
Right. But
that's me because I'm a normal guy.
Yeah. I mean, there's a possibility I went to one time because I did find out there was one at the Scottsdale Fashion Center. And that was kind of the secondary mall I'd go to besides the Chandler Fashion Center, which was closer.
Right.
Yeah, I lived at Chandler, but, you know, some of my friends lived in Scottsdale. Sometimes we'd go to the mall. But, you know, maybe I went to it one time, but it didn't really leave any impression on me if I did.
Yeah.
I probably just sold stuffed animals of, like, the Rugrats and SpongeBob or something, you know? I thought it was all that special.
I mean, the only thing you can find, like, Nickelodeon merchandise at is, like, I mean, we have a second in Charles in Greenville, and, like, they have, like a 90s section, and it's, like, Rugrats paraphernalia and just like stuff from Nickelodeon, like on this one shelf. It was there one time, and it was just like stuff I couldn't care less about. And it's like, okay, if you will, if you really, really want me to buy something from Rocco's Modern Life, give me something that is so obscure that only someone would know. If they watch the show, they know what it is. So like, if they had like a really, really big man shirt, I would buy a really, really big man shirt. Because the people that would watch that show would know who really, really, really big man is. Or a kind of a lot of comics like Staff Shirt. Something stupidly obscure like that. Or Conclamo. Like, you gotta get, yeah. Or like a G.I. Jimbo shirt or something. Like, something, like you would have to be like a diehard fan and watch every episode of that show to put something so minuscule from an episode that would let me buy it. That's how you get my business.
Yeah. Maybe they would do like the choking chicken or whatever.
The choking chicken would be good, yeah. But it's like, oh, look, Rocco's Modern Life. There's Heifer and Dilbert and Rocco. Yeah, remember this show? And I'm like, yeah, there's more to it than those three characters. It was a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, probably most of these things that they sell at these types of stores, it's going to be like Reptar from Rugrats.
There's tons of Reptar stuff. I've seen that, shirts. And I just go, and I remember considering a Reptar shirt once, and I stopped and I said, no, don't get it. And then I walked away.
There's a house, one of these houses around here that's always got their garage door open for reasons I don't understand. It has a big Reptar plushie, like in their garage. And sometimes I see birds perching on it and stuff. It's kind of like, that plushie's going to destroy it. It's going to get bird shit all over it.
They could just use it for yard decoration at that point.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, let's get to the movie.
All right, yeah, I was like, I don't want to talk about Chris Chan. I don't know.
There's nothing new that's happened. He just got a continuance. I mean,
well, he had all those letters, and I think people stopped transcribing it because the people were on Kiwi, and then like they just like been posting them up. And there's been, like, this one guy from a website that was calling Chris, and now he's just like, oh, I should have never gotten involved. And that's basically it. No, Chris has added, like, six more commandments, which is basically heathenism, and adding to the Bible, which is asceticism, and that's all evil regardless, because Chris doesn't know jack shit. And, anyways.
One was, you can't call me fat.
What?
One of the new commandments was, you can't call me fat.
Or you can't post mean things on social media or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the new letters, he does specifically say, like, here's my new commandment. Thou shalt not post anything implying I'm overweight or something. Yeah, He's issued like a lot of these ones that are all just like self-serving commandments that, about him.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, I mean, there was some. There's this guy Kenneth who posts the letters. He's like Chris's current manager, I guess.
I would say liaison.
Yeah. Yeah. Noel is broken with him. So this Kenneth guy, he was trying to continue Sonic Shoe like with some sort of horrid fanfic, and he sent it to Chris. And Chris wrote in this really giant letters in ! And then like multiple pages denouncing this continuation that Kenneth did. So I don't know. I think that those two are probably going to split, and I don't think that he's written very many letters to Kenneth since then. But this guy is how we know about Barb getting into the car accident. I don't know if that's been mentioned on a previous episode.
Regarding Barb?
Yeah.
No, we haven't talked about this.
He was in a car crash, and Kenneth says that now she's being cared for by relatives, and it's believed that the hoard has been removed from the house because people have taken pictures, and you can actually see through the windows instead of it just being cardboard boxes piled up.
Yeah. Well, isn't the house for sale or something?
Yeah, that's sort of not conclusive, but it's thought that it may have been listed or maybe not. Well, I mean, the thing is, Chris is still asking for money for the mortgage and stuff, and I think somebody ran into a realtor while they were on that street, and they thought it was Chris's house for sale, and someone looked it up, and it was another house on the street for sale or something. But I think that basically Barb moved into another house of the aunt and uncle that they turned Chris away after he raped his mother. I think Barb moved in with them. Uncle Tom and Aunt Harriet, or maybe with Cole Smithy. It's not really clear.
But she's out of the Sonitude dungeon,
right? And I don't know if she's in contact with Chris. Like if she saw him at the trial or not, because it was a closed trial.
No, she needs to stay far in the hell away from him.
Yeah, but she might have been required to be there as a witness or something. I don't know.
Like, that's true.
But I mean, I don't think that no trolls could get in or anything. All we know is it's just been continued again. I don't even know if they said a date or not, but this thing has gone on for many months, and it's probably going to keep going on for a long time, and Chris is going to keep getting crazier and posting more stuff about King Arthur and Merlin and the dragons and the dimensional marriage and time-traveling Messiah bit 1389 and all that.
I'm at the point where, like, when this all came out, like, you know, back in the summer last year, I was just kind of like pissed off, and I gave my thoughts on how the true inerrancy of scripture and how Chris was interpreting it. And now I'm at the point where I just don't care because he's not, I was like, well, he's got God's wrath to deal with. I don't want to be near that. And that's none of my business. So there you go.
I still am amused by the fact that even though he claims to be Jesus, he's only read still this one Bible verse that he misinterpreted.
It was Nehemiah or something. Oh God!
He includes it in every single letter, and that like his one thing is just like this one sentence that he randomly flipped open to and then decided to incorporate, which is his religion.
Yeah,
self worship. But yeah, I mean that pretty much sums up the latest Christian stuff. I mean he's about as crazy as ever.
Yeah, I don't know what the measurement of the deep end, but he's tipped and fell over, well, like long ago, and he just decided just to go head straight first into it. I mean, that's kind of how it is now. Like it seemed like that teetering point. He was already like horizontal diving into the pit right before the arrest. And since he's been in prison, he just decided to go head first into the deep end.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's like, it's an act of God if he gets out of it, so.
I think there may have not been any water in the pool, too, and he may have split his skull open. Get some brain damage.
I'm thinking, like, when I say deep end, I'm thinking, like a chasm like Grand Canyon, not really like a 12-foot swimming pool. But to each their own, and a definition of what a deep end is. But I get your visual point. Anyways, so About 45 minutes ago, we were supposed to talk about Gundam Hathaway's Flash, and we're about to get into it, and then we decided to just spew out everything in our brains for the past 45 minutes, which feels good to get it out there. But yeah. You want to talk about some Gundam?
Sure.
So, yeah, Hathaway's Flash is a series I've known about for, many years. Like, ever since I got into Gundam and, like, the Mark Simmons Gundam guide from Animerica back in, like, 2002. So it was a matter of just, like, when was this going to get adapted? And so now it's finally in the process of getting adapted because it's based on these novels in the 80s that I know, like, Tomino wrote Gundam Sentinel, which I'd love to see made, but... I think he had involvement with Hathaway's Flash, I'm pretty sure. Let me check.
These are novels written by Tomino, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. I could be wrong, but that's also what I thought.
All right, well, we can check.
And then recently they made a manga, and then now they made a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Tomino wrote the novels. Okay, pretty much, like, Unicorn's the only one that's not written by Tomino that's actually really solid. So, yeah, so he wrote these novels back in... 89 to 1990, there's three books. And, yeah, Mikimoto did the character designs for the manga covers. But I think in the character design for the anime, they in the credits had Toshihiro Hirano, who did Icer 1 and a number of other things.
I like that.
Yeah. But, anyway, so... Yeah, this is regarding basically summed up that, like, Hathaway's become a terrorist of the Federation, and he must be stopped. And that is about as much as I've known about it for 20 years at this point. So I think, you know, I think they might have adapted the first book. So, like, the chapters are, like, Gigi, this chapter 2 is Lounge, there's Kenneth, there's Hijack, so it looks like yeah, they kind of combined the first four chapters into the first part with the plane.
Yeah, they did adapt the first book, and they're making another movie to adapt the next one.
Yeah, that would make sense, because then if you just adapt the book per film, then, you know, you're getting three films, so we know what to expect. Unless they decide to, like, oh, let's do four and make more money. So
yeah, I think they could have adapted a little more here. I mean, sped it up a little with less of those stupid stuff in the hotel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nothing happens that first hour, because it's basically hot blonde chick whose name is Gigi. I guess she's a new type or something. I don't know. Like, on the plane, we're like, there's the terrorist group MAFTI, which is a dumb name, but regardless of that. And this takes place like 12 years after the events of Char's counterattack. And that seems like the Federation even has a tighter grip on the Earth and space. But, yeah, so there's, like, this terrorist group that comes in to hijack this plane that Hathaway's on. And yeah. They're after, basically, high-level Federation leaders and diplomats. And they're kind of taking out... I mean, basically, it's taking out the heads of the serpent that is the Federation. And now you have them all together in this one nice, convenient area on a plane. And it felt like very much like Air Force One with Harrison Ford. When I was watching, I was like, wait a second. This is like Air Force One, kind of. And but Hathaway punks, like, a bunch of terrorists because he's got military training. And the thing in the show is the fact that, like, everyone, like, you know, he got Kenneth, who was like, oh, man, it's impressive that you shot down a mobile suit. And, you know, and the Char's Rebellion or whatever, and, you know, you didn't have any training. That's impressive. And he's like, well, my dad got in a lot of trouble, and I didn't get backhanded enough to correct me to be a better person. But, I mean, when he talks about he did kill, Chan, I think. No, wait, Chan was killed by Quest. I gotta remember this movie. At Char's counterattack.
They did say that he killed someone in this movie, but I don't remember who he killed.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I don't really remember. And I thought he shot... No, he did shoot Chan. He killed Chan, as I'm pretty sure, like, when the... after Quest, like, you know, it gets in the middle, and like, her final demise, and then... Hathaway acts all emotional and kills Chan. Right? Now, that was basically his kill right there.
So and, in Charlotte's counterattack, he's against Char, right, Hathaway?
Yeah, but he's on the Federation. He just wants to be with Quest. It doesn't matter where Quest goes. He wants to be near her. And Quest is so screwed up. And even Hathaway, like with Gigi, he's just like, with her being like, you know, this like free-spirited blonde chick, he's just like, oh, crap. This is Quest all over again. I gotta ditch this chick. And then you got Kenneth, who's like, you're the lucky lady for our team, a.k.a. I'm gonna F you. Let me put my dick in you.
She's just like, yeah, everybody is like going out with her throughout the whole movie.
Yes.
And then he like walks in on her naked. And it's just this like cheesy romantic comedy for like the first hour.
After
And then you get all this confusing stuff about like, he's in MAFTI, which is a terrorist group, but then there's like a fake MAFTI too that's also a terrorist group. I don't know what the difference is between their tactics, but like when they do terrorism, it's bad, but when Hathaway does it, it's good or something. it's just like, it's just stupid. I mean, like, what was the point of him becoming like, I guess he's supposed to be like the new Char. I mean, you can see in the scene where he's in the car with the taxi driver, and the taxi driver is like, you know, he's reluctant to go out into outer space. And you can tell Hathaway, he thinks of him the same way that like, you know, somebody who's like a devout New York Times reader thinks of people who haven't had the vaccine or something, you know? Like, he's like, they've got this look of complete contempt for the guy because the guy is like, got to deal with his personal problems of like, you know, staying alive, paying bills and stuff, and he isn't concerned with what's the weather going to be like in 1,000 years, you know? Like, he's a deplorable who hasn't like studied all the global warming models.
Because he's a regular Joe trying to make a regular living in his taxi with the worst looking, ugliest interior I've ever seen in a car. It was like taking a 1990s t-shirt and you throw up every section of that car and they call that the interior. That was the inside of his car. So bad.
Weird patterns on the seats.
Yes. Oh, it was disgusting.
But yeah, basically this is one of these scenes, like sometimes you'll see that in like a bar in Unicorn or something, where you can get just an idea of what the average person on the Gundam Earth thinks about. You know?
Yes.
And I do like when they have a scene like this, because it shows like not everybody is like pathological about space, but Hathaway is apparently now. Mm-hmm. He's one of these people who thinks like, you know, if we don't all get off the Earth, we're evil. And like, you know, in outer space, there's not going to be like, you know, environmental problems or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of this bullshit space worship ideology that most of the people in Gundam have. Mm-hmm. I mean, they think that it's really practical. Like, you're going to move billions of people onto these like floating like balls of metal with no natural resources, and somehow you're going to terraform them and make them into these like utopias where everyone has like complete green energy or something. And it's kind of like, well, if that could be done, we would be able to do it much easier on Earth than we would to create an entire artificial environment and do it in.
Oh, it costs much less too. Like, I'm just saying, like, this sounds like a democratic utopia here, where it's, you know, their idea of heaven on Earth is getting us off Earth into the heavens, into giant metal cylinders in order to save energy.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of crack-brained thing you'd think that, like, an Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos would think of. You know, they're Richard Branson.
Yeah.
These billionaires that are, like, always going on about how, oh, within 10 years, we'll have a colony set up on Mars, and you can all go there on my rocket ship.
They were trying to talk about setting up colonies back in the 70s or something on the moon. They're like, oh, in the 2000s, the military's going to make sure that we live on the moon. It's going to be habitable. You know, like basically have like a Luna, or not Luna, but Von Braun City or something like that. There was Lagrange, I think it was the other one in Gundam.
Yeah, I mean, Gundam, it is a 70s series originally, so it comes out of that era when we were still sending people to the moon, and it seemed like there was some future for the moon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that kind of stopped, like, 40 years ago. And nobody has really gone to the moon in a long time because, like, why bother? It's just a rock.
Yeah. It's a rock that keeps the tides in place, and we get to see really cool eclipses and stuff whenever that happens every 100 or so years. Yeah. That's basically it. Yeah. Oh, and that's where the Moonanites live, too. So we can't encroach on their territory. Otherwise, we'll get spanked with moon rocks.
Yeah. Maybe in some alternate history where we'd spent, like, trillions more on, like, space exploration or whatever in the 80s or something, we might have been able to create some sort of artificial environment there. But really, the problem you have with all these other planets is just the temperature issue. I mean, as they rotate, the temperature swings are much more extreme than they are on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have the right atmosphere. And these plants, they don't have water and, like, food and, like, life. So, like, they kind of suck compared to our planet. So,
and that's a good point, because if you have to rely on importing stuff to these colonies in order to sustain a population, well, then what happens if your space truckers decide to protest and threaten not to deliver your crap to your own space colony? Then you have a supply and demand issue. Then you're on your own. So
yeah, what do you do when the Earth gets shut down and they suspend flights because they don't want COVID traveling to your planet?
Your space colony.
When all the astronauts are refusing to get the vaccine, and then NASA won't work with them. There's so many problems that could happen now with all the COVID fascism. You couldn't even do this because there'd be people, you know, getting into fights over should the astronauts have to wear a mask inside of their suit when there's no one else around? You know, there'd be all kinds of idiotic mandates like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the astronauts would be like, there's nobody else in my fucking space suit. Why do I have to wear a mask?
There you go, exactly. Who am I sharing my spacesuit with? Like, you need to tell me, because as far as I know, I'm the only one.
And then they'd be like, well, there might be, like, a microscopic, symbiotic organism in your spacesuit, and you might not know. You don't want to give the symbiote COVID, and then we might not be able to bring venom back to Earth.
Oh, my God. So you got all of that, and then he had this other idea of this utopia that people are trying to achieve while COVID is happening. And it's like, how are you going to achieve all of this at the same time? Answer is, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking a couple of years ago about the Great Reset on here, which was talked about on the Alex Jones Joe Rogan episode. Which is basically this guy Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum. He had all these plans written up about how you'll own nothing and you'll like it. And all this stuff about how they were going to use this as a way to remake the world in a more sustainable way. And you get hints of this in Build Back Better, which is now dead because Joe Manchin won't go along with it. Mm. But, this whole idea of we're going to rebuild everything, and it's going to be a utopia this time, where there will be equity and fairness, and people won't be greedy anymore, and everything will be green. There won't be any more emissions. This is all pie in the sky. I mean, we live in a world of scarcity, and
we've had a scarcity on items like the PS5 before any of the shortages happened.
Just
to clue in reality there. And, you know, when you want to create a utopia, someone's in control of that utopia. Someone's in charge of that equality. Therefore, no one's equal. There you have it.
Right. I mean, exactly. Who's administering these programs?
Yes.
Who has the power? I mean,
yeah.
There's never going to be a world without power.
Someone has to be in power somewhere to do stuff all the time and to lead the world the way they want it to. So,
right.
Yeah. Because I think if there was never this secret globalist, whoever's really pulling the strings on all these nations and these politicians, how much different things would be right now. As a matter of fact, we probably wouldn't have to pay that much in taxes to the government, for one. But I digress.
So, yeah, I mean, Tomino, he comes out of this sort of milieu of, like, 70s utopianism.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of that, and especially in a character like Char, where he has all these sort of utopian dreams about, like, everybody leaving the Earth, and then they won't, their souls won't be bound down by gravity.
They won't be evil to do evil things, like the evil thing that I'm doing to smashing this big-ass rock into Earth.
Right, right.
Yes, the double standard there is amazing.
Yeah, the people on Earth are so immoral because dot, dot, dot. Yeah. The Federation, dot, dot, dot. You know, like, I guess the Federation is just, you know, they're corrupt or whatever. I mean, we kind of get the picture. They always seem to switch around where the characters will either be in the Federation or in an anti-Federation group within the span of just a few years.
Uh-huh.
So, like, the original show, you've got the main characters are working for the Federation, and sort of Zeon is portrayed as being evil, but sort of ambiguous, because there are people in Zeon who are not totally evil. But,
yeah.
You know, it's seen as being, like, these are guys that are dropping colonies on Earth. Their leader is kind of like Hitler.
Yeah. You know, that was an executive decision to drop colonies on Earth and use the solar ray and things like that. It's essentially the because they use solar ray 2 in Gundam 83, and that's just the improving the tech to protect the Federation from something like that happening again when it happened to them already. Kind of like with how the whole atomic race started, where America used it for the benefit to end the war. However, it caused everyone else to make their own nuclear weapons. Therefore, we have created another problem. In order to solve a problem to end a war, we must have another bigger war that came from that. It's interesting how humanity works. So,
yeah, and so then you get after that you get the Zabi family are dead, and then you have Han take over, and then it's sort of I guess more ambiguous here. Like with Zeta Gundam, you have you have the AU, the Anti-Earth. And most of the people who are working for the Federation in the original are now working for them.
Yeah.
Because then the Earth becomes,
the Titans.
Main villain. The Titans. And then you have Zeon reappearing as well and becoming more so the villain in Double Zeta.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, are they still considered Aeyug, right? And his people? Or are they... Federation by Double Zeta? I can't recall.
I think AU was still around. I have to rewatch Double Zeta, but they were still around then because.
So Judo and them, they're working for AU. Yeah.
Yes, because they were still, like, after that big battle in Zeta Gundam, like, all sides are just, like, decimated completely and just, like, on their last leg, and Judo gets involved with his gang, and so they're essentially with the Argama at that point. I can't really remember much of the how much they got involved with AUG, but it was less on politics and more on, like, you know, really stopping Zeon or Neo Zeon at that point from Haman Karn. And right. There wasn't really a point to keep there wasn't any reason to have an AUG regiment or group by the time Char's counterattack came around, because it seemed like the Federation, okay, we learned our lesson. And then Zeon attacks again, and then Unicorn Zeon attacks again. And now this time we have an anti-Federation group, which is not affiliated with Zeon as of what we've seen on this first movie so far.
Yeah, so that was what was interesting here, is because it's kind of like after Haman and Char are gone, is Zeon kind of obsolete, or... There's some remnants still around. I don't know.
Well, then you got Full Frontal too, and that was Unicorn, which is just Char 2.0.
Right, and all the clones of Peru and all that stuff. That's true. Yeah, you have Unicorn, but this is like what set 10 years after Unicorn or something.
Well, it was like it's in Universal Century 105. Char's counterattack was in 0093, so 12 years later. And so, like, Hathaway is, like, in his mid-20s, and he's running this anti-Federation league, basically. And, of course, he's able to keep his guys from everybody else while he's under Federation control, and, like, really a very good actor. Because it was kind of like, is he gonna? It's like, is he really the terrorist? I'm not really too sure.
They say his father is still in the Federation, right?
That's the way I took it. He didn't retire. They're just like, oh, he's still in command of like the 13th Fleet or something like that. They just kind of threw it away. And so I'm curious when they adapt the second movie, or maybe even the third one, like when Bright's going to come back and just say, son, I am disappointed.
Yeah, I have a feeling that it's coming in that direction of either Bright is...
Those two are going to get together, and then Bright's going to save up the 10 years of Bright slaps he's had for that kid's face. And then it's going to be 10 minutes of just backhands till there's nothing left of Hathaway's face. And see, like, Bright wasn't being lazy. He was just resting up for that moment. One can only hope, so. Oh, shoot. Did I lose you?
No, I was just thinking about what else happens in this movie.
Oh, okay.
So they're in the hotel for a long time, and then eventually the hotel gets attacked.
Yeah.
And they have to escape in the elevator. They're going down the elevator, and the hotel starts shaking and stuff.
Yeah,
and
but they're escaping with that, like, that Federation diplomat, which I don't know if he was with his secretary or his wife or something. Mm-hmm. I was like, whatever. And so they went somewhere else. And so they kind of followed, like, Hathaway and Gigi trying to get away from the combat and all that, but it kept happening around them. And I really, really enjoyed the realism and the details of, like, destruction that these mobile suit weapons do from a civilian perspective regarding when things melt and parts of those melted things fly into other things, those things melt those things. And, you know, any kind of rumbling in the ground, a step can cause half a building to collapse. You got a Federation mobile suit that decides to stand on a building for no damn reason and then decides to crumble under its weight. And you just, everything was so detailed on just how purely destructive these big machines are. And I also like the fact that they got these, like, the hunters, it's like this, you know, hunting down these terrorists or whatever. It's basically a, you know, Gestapo unit, military police or whatever, for these civilians. And they got to check IDs or whatever. And they got mobile suits with, like, sentry turrets, like, turrets set up in the pelvic area. So you got one guy piloting it and another guy that's a gunner, like, in an open space. So I thought that was very interesting for mobile suit design. I'm like, huh, when are we going to get that kit?
Yeah, I'm sure they've made kits for these models. That's right.
As far as I know, they've only done the Penelope and the Z... or the XI or whatever. It's called XI or something. Those kits have come out or been out for like maybe a couple years. But they haven't done the one with like the mobile suit with like a gunner position on it or something. Or like, I guess you wouldn't call it a tail gunner. It's like a pelvic gunner, a penis gunner. I don't know. A dick gunner.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, like, it's kind of, yeah, so they had to go into space, so they have, like, an underground fortress, and, like, or they have, like, a temporary base set up under, like, it looks like the remnants of, like, a military base that once existed that was really rusted, it's got moss over it, that Hathaway gets on this little boat with his kid to then go to this other boat to be picked up by his people, and I think the redheaded chick, for some reason, she reminds me of, like, the punk chick from Char's Counterattack in the very beginning with Quest's group. And I could be wrong, and maybe it's someone else. I don't know. But I just kind of like... she looks familiar, but maybe I'm just thinking of somebody else.
The way certain girls were drawn, they sort of looked like other characters, but weren't.
Yeah, but more grown up.
Mm-hmm. Like, one of them had eyes that kind of looked like Mirai or something. I don't know. But it wasn't her. Yeah. They're trying to draw like Tomino style,
but yeah. So then you had the base there that was like a temporary setup, and then they had to fly into space to get the Z or the Zi or something. And then of course that fights the Penelope, which the Penelope is piloted by a guy that I thought was a girl at first, and even sounded like one, but in the dub at least. But then he's got like one of his you know, one of the pilots they captured in the raid earlier in the film, and then of course Hathaway gets him back, because the kids like wanted to fight honorably against his Penelope against his Gundam, the Zai. And I didn't even see the, like, they're like, oh, how did you get away? Oh, I threw the beam rifle and the thing blew up. And I didn't even, like, see, I guess that must have went past me or I looked somewhere else during that shot. I might have to go, I probably don't feel like I need to go back and watch it again. But, I mean, they're on, like, so now they got the Gundam and, like, you know, Hathaway's group has the Gundam, like, in this, like, oil tanker. So they're transporting it incognito across the Pacific or whatever. And that's kind of how that movie ends there. I don't really remember. I mean, the rest of it is just, like, Kenneth hitting on Gigi. And then Hathaway kind of, like, not really interested. And then Kenneth giving Hathaway a hard time. Interrogating how what happened on the ship. And a bunch of other boring BS. But this film is a whole lot better. I was way more invested in it than it was that stupid unicorn movie that came out a couple years ago.
That Gundam narrative?
Yes, that I did not care about that film. And I'm never, I have no desire to ever see it again, to be honest.
It wasn't all that great. I don't remember. Just a generic new type story.
It was. And like one of the guys from like the Gundam group I was part of in Greenville, and we went after the film, and he's just like, yeah, I got a question. Like, what the hell happened? Yeah. Good old Danny.
Yeah, I couldn't say really. I mean, people, new types fighting in space, something like that.
That movie was boring. It was just a bunch of flashing and like cool mobile suit battles, but like what's going on? Why should I care? And that was basically it. And I don't know. We talked about it whenever that came out a couple years ago, and I honestly cannot tell you what happened. If you ask me, what happened in that film now? Because I can't do it.
No, I couldn't name any of the characters or summarize the plot or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do remember seeing that movie, but I don't remember anything else about it.
Yeah. But, I don't know. Any other thoughts on Hathaway's Flash? I know we kind of summed it up, like, in about 20 minutes.
I know it's kind of been dormant since that movie. I mean, I come to think about it, that's probably the last time I saw anything Gundam related. You know, it was several years ago. I mean, it was like
two or three years ago when Narrative came out? Because they, like, what was it, over a year later they finally released it on Blu-ray.
Yeah. I don't have it on Blu-ray because I don't care.
If it's $5 at a con someday, I may pick it up. I don't really know, but
yeah.
Maybe not. it's kind of how I feel with Seed. It's just like, I mean, we saw the compilation films to Seed, and we reviewed it many, many years ago, and I don't know. I still don't have the will to, like, ever pick up something from Seed. Maybe it needs to be gifted to me, and then I feel like I could watch it all over again. I don't know.
I'd buy it if it weren't for the fact that it's $300 on Right Stuff exclusive.
Well, that's that stupid collector's edition, and that's all they have.
They won't release it normal.
That's what I don't get either. Like, why can't they release it normal? I mean,
and it's been like a year or two or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just not going
to
do that.
I mean, you have the cheaper alternatives to get Evangelion on Blu-ray now. If you want to watch the original dub, and you know, you could be like me and bought the bougie $300, like a limited edition collector's thing that came with a booklet that I still need to read through that looked really, really interesting. And it's sitting on my shelf right now and it looks really awesome and big and heavy. So,
yeah, I don't feel the need to spend $300 on Ava either because I'm satisfied with my platinum edition.
I still have mine too. I will be honest, like, because I've been watching the show with a couple of my apartment community, and we've got like maybe the last six episodes to go through, but we've been dealing with sickness and other stuff over the past month. But I pop in my that platinum edition, and it just looks really good on their TV in HD. And when I popped in the Blu-ray sets, I was like, "There's a lot of grain into this," and. And I'm talking about the original, like the what they called the classic dub, which is just the ADV dub. But like I popped in those to kind of compare it, and I feel like the whatever version they're using for the Netflix one looks slightly better than the ones that they had for the classic dub. Wow. At least on my TV. That's how I personally feel. I mean, it looks big and sharp, but then I just feel like there's a lot of grain there, and I didn't catch that when I'm watching the Platinum Edition. I don't know.
You know, it's a weird thing when you watch a Blu-ray. Sometimes they, like, I guess they use, like, the whatever the masters are, and the masters have, like, deteriorated since the previous release.
That could be so, it, too. Yeah.
It's kind of like how if you watch Dragon Ball Z Kai, it actually looks worse than if you watch Dragon Ball Z, because the Toei has allowed the masters to deteriorate so much that, like, when Goku's fighting Raditz, you can just see these little specks of white grain all over their black hair. And it's just like,
That was it on this. I was just like, no, my discs look perfectly fine. They're, you know, I'm looking at them like there's nothing on them. I mean, this had never been, it's not a disc issue. It's coming from the video itself. But no, when I watched a couple of the promos, like the promo, I think there were some promo videos that they had on the Blu-ray set in Japan, and those look great. And like End of Evangelion looks really good. So I can't wait to show them that film when we go through it. I don't know.
If you're ever in the mood to watch a true quality mecha series, you can always watch Pilot Candidate and Survive from the
Heart. Oh gosh! Didn't you pick that up recently?
Yes, and it came in the mail, and that was a great birthday present for myself. Pilot Candidate.
So it really paid off getting it for whatever you spent on it.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of it yet, but we should watch it and review it because it would be funny.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, we review other terrible stuff. I mean, speaking of the anime, I got was like for Christmas I bought the Pat Labor Blu-ray set finally after like wanting to get it for like 3 or 4 years now, from Sentai. So like I got that for like less than $50, which is about the best deal you're gonna get on it, I think. So like I have all the Pat Labor on Blu-ray that I can eventually go through. I still got the DVD sets that I got from VQ years ago when he sent me that big box of stuff. Right. I only paid him for the shipping, but I never paid him for the rest of the items. And he was right. He's like, "Oh, just pay me the 50. And then I sent him $50. He's like, "Well, no, that's not everything." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "You only cover for shipping." And I was like, "Oh, I'll get you the rest of the money." And I don't remember if I did or not. And he acted like he didn't care. He's just like, "I want my stuff to have a good home." So.
Right. That was when he got really bitter and spiteful to an even greater degree than he already was. Like he really turned against anime for some reason. Like because he was bitter about working in a warehouse for
Bluefin. Yeah.
He was upset that they didn't have like strict enough safety requirements in the warehouse, so that made him hate anime or something.
Yeah.
He's just a weird, spiteful guy.
Yeah.
But he really started refusing to watch any new anime at that point, I remember. And I think I can't even remember what it was. He was upset that Bluefin was running some Kickstarter or something. He thought that Kickstarter was a scam because it replaced pre-orders as a way for people to get stuff, exclusively to them or whatever, in advance of it being released. I don't understand why he was so hateful towards crowdfunding, but he really got angry about it.
Yeah, he like pissed on me for supporting the Shenmue Kickstarter. He's like, "Well, it's going to get a general release, so you're so stupid." And I'm like, "Yeah, but I got a cool shirt out of that and like some DLC out of it." The shirt came like months later because of COVID, but it's sitting in my closet now. I don't want to wear that shirt. I don't want anything happening to it. But then like Limited Run is put out their $150 collection like a year ago that I got through a New Year's Eve thing. New Year's Eve New Year's 2021. And it's been well over a year, and it still hasn't come out yet. And I think it's supposed to come out. They just said release, like, first quarter 2022, which is any point between now and maybe the summer? I don't know.
So, Limited Run, they seem to be really slow, but I bought Sam & Max on Switch not too long ago, and it didn't take that long for me to get it. But I guess that some games, they print more of a Limited Run than others.
It depends on, like, where they're getting the products from, the license, and how long it takes to do that. It depends on who they're coming. I think their printings for stuff that's domestic, it's a whole lot quicker because they're dealing with people in the United States. And then whereas Japan, if they got to ship stuff, they got to wait for everything to get there on the boats, which we know how much of a disaster that's been the past few months. And so then they get it all there, and they got to make sure everything's there together before they even ship it out. So, like, it's, you know, I got my Scott Pilgrim game, like, back in the summer, because I got the standard, like, $60 release or something. And then Daft got the one with the whole, like, you know, stand-up, like, band stage special box that was, like, way more. And he's got to wait for all that to come in, including the stickers and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been complaining a lot about how long it's taking him to get it.
Yeah.
He also mentions, like, these Funko Pops or whatever crap that he buys, how long they take. Like, some of them were ordered, like, last year or whatever, and it would come.
I'll tell you something else I got in the mail that you're talking about taking forever through Kickstarting or crowdfunding was the Bean Bandit anime from Kenichi Sonoda, which, to sum up, I think I spent like $60-$70 on it. So I spent $60-$70 on basically a 14-minute CGI anime with very limited animation. And then, like, an hour and a half commentary track of, like, four Japanese dudes in a ramen shop getting drunk talking about what they made. And then, like, a video of, like, a handy cam from, like, the convention out in Chicago, Illinois that Kenichi Sonoda spoke at. That was basically all that was on that Blu-ray. And I felt like I got ripped off. I was like, you've been working on this for... And I understand anime is a hard thing to make, especially, I guess... But it was always in production before, it was Anime Next, before, like, COVID hit. And I thought he had, like, a great team or whatever, and it seemed like they just had, like, this, like, 6 or 7 minute anime concept for a Writing Bean show or a pilot or something. And, yeah, I got that in, like, New Year's Eve 2021. I was like, cool, I got something to watch, like, you know, this weekend or whatever. And I popped it in, and I was like, huh? Like, that's it?
So, I remember this Bean Bandit. Didn't we review this for the Cool Kids Club?
No. Okay, so that's Writing Bean. That's what he made. Writing. That's 45 minutes long back in, like, 1989, based off a manga he did. He wanted to bring it back and do a crowdfunding for called Bean Bandit that incorporates some of the characters from Gunsmith Cats. And Bean Bandit. So you have the Raleigh Vincent from Bean Bandit, the blonde, not the dark-haired one from Gunsmith Cats. And I thought, like, what they had in Anime Nexus was, like, a teaser. Like, okay, cool, this is just, like, the first 7 minutes or so. You know, they're going to show at the convention, and you know, the rest of it's going to be 45-minute OVA. I'm fine with that, whatever, maybe 40 minutes or so. Doesn't matter. Like, I get, like, a full-length story. And this one just felt like a concept of three different ideas that they threw together in 14 or 15 minute video. And I was like, huh? Like, what? So yeah. I was a bit, like, I popped it in and I was like, and I saw, like, the commentary track of them talking, which is, I like commentary tracks, but then it's like, wait, did we just jump $60,000 to treat these guys to drink beer and sake at a ramen shop to talk about something they made that lasts 14 minutes long? But I guess in some defense, it's like Kenichi Sonoda is up in his age, and I think they made everything, like, it was a very, very small production. They didn't have, like, they didn't outsource it, and maybe they couldn't pay to do that. And maybe that's all they were able to do, with just, like, the guy, like, just a handful of people that had to work on it in their old age, which is, like, I understand that, but, like, you know, I thought you got a pretty good chunk of money that you at least paid animators outside to work on something that could at least last until, like, 45 minutes or maybe even 30 minutes or so. I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, 15 minutes, that's pretty pitiful. Even back in the day, they would usually be a half hour.
Yeah, I know Gerald Rathkulp from Anime World Order, he pitched into that project too, so... Whenever I see him at a con next time, I'm going to ask him his opinions on that. Like, hey, what do you think of that Bean Bandit Blu-ray? What's your thoughts on that? So,
the other day, Daft and I were streaming on the MySpring server, the J Jodorowsky's Dune movie, which is all about this plan in the 70s to make this Dune movie that was going to be real insane and expensive and stuff.
Yeah.
And it ended up not happening. But then after that, he played the final short by Ralph Bakshi. And it was something called, like, Last Days of Coney Island or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funded on Kickstarter or some crowdfunding site like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only about 30 minutes long. And, it just had this sense of, like, this guy is really over the hill. He's relying on all this cheap scatological humor and stuff. But and the people in the chat didn't seem to like that short much at all. But, I guess that's part of the problem with these crowdfunding things is, people, they fund it. They think it's going to be like something great that somebody made decades ago. But this is somebody who usually is kind of over the hill and can't get work in the industry under normal circumstances again. So they're cashing in on the nostalgia that people have for their older releases.
Mm-hmm.
And then they release something and it's just a disappointment. Another good example of this is Mighty No. 9. This was a video game. That everybody got all hyped about and then massively turned on because it became this bizarre, he kept increasing the stretch goals and it had this idea they were going to make it into a movie and all these plans.
Yeah.
And then the game itself, when it finally came out after all these years, people didn't even like the thing. Mm-hmm. And it was not the successor to Mega Man that people thought it was going to be based on this guy's reputation
from Mega Man.
And, I ended up buying the thing for Wii U, but, I'm just not that good. I can't make it past the first level.
I think I bought it on PS4, like, really cheap, and, I think I got to, like, the second area, and I was just kind of like, I'm kind of bored with this.
Yeah, there's some area where you have to jump through, like, a bunch of fireballs or something, and I just can't do it. I tried it a lot, but at a certain point, it's just, my reflexes are not fast enough to do this, and I'm just frustrating myself, so I give up.
You mean you're not going to cry disability on Twitter that you can't play video games like CG does?
No, I'm not going to be like, this game is discriminating against me because I can't have the right depth perception to understand the fireball patterns. I mean, if I spend like hundreds of hours trying it over and over, I'm sure I could do it, but it's just like at a certain point, I'd rather play a different game.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll come back to it someday, and maybe not.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is with Mega Man games, though. I haven't made it very far in most of them, because they're very mm-hmm. challenging. You have to do it over and over. It's like NES hard, as they say,
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way they did things back then, because it'd be a game that if you're perfect at it, you can beat it in like an hour. And you can see these people do this stuff on YouTube because they've played it a million times.
Yeah.
You gotta really like have been doing it for a long time to be that good.
Mm-hmm. So, do you want to talk about Boba Fett to close this out?
Yeah, sure. So, I guess one interesting thing about Boba Fett is, like you said, that it was trying to bring back the original Star Wars universe or something. I mean, I've heard people say that about The Mandalorian, too, and we kind of discussed that with season two of that. But I think somebody posted a video on the chat, but I didn't watch the video yet, but it was like about, is Boba Fett restoring the original Star Wars or something like that?
So, yeah, there was a guy on, and I got linked this from a friend of mine. It was a guy on YouTube talking about episode 6 with Grogu and his training with Luke being a Jedi.
Right.
And the thing was that I guess like the fate of Star Wars canon held in the balance or held in the hands, the tiny hands of Grogu based on his decision in episode 6. Cause the thing was, the argument was based on this guy on YouTube, which you would be correct, was that if Luke gave Grogu a choice regarding the chainmail that he had made from the Veskar armor or metal. And of course, if Grogu chose that, he would be giving up on his Jedi training to spend his life with the Mandalorian as a Mandalorian youngling, because he was adopted, and that's what the Mandalorians do with the children in wars or whatever to make them Mandalorians, I guess. So there was that option, or pick up Yoda's lightsaber and walk the path of being a Jedi and not having attachment to the past in order to focus on your destiny with your force powers. And that's how the episode ended. So everyone's like, okay, so if Yoda, I mean, baby Yoda picks the lightsaber, that would mean that Luke's first apprentice is Grogu. Therefore, it would cancel out the trilogy movies, or the sequel movies, where they said Kylo Ren was Luke's first apprentice. So if he picked up the lightsaber, then those movies would have been canceled out, which is what these fans really, 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 really wanted it. And if he didn't do that and pick the chainmail, which is what happened, we find in episode 7, because somehow baby Yoda knows how to fly an X-Wing. I don't think he knew how to fly an X-Wing. Luke was probably just like, baby Yoda, I am disappointed that you didn't pick the Jedi way, but R2-D2 will just pilot you with his robot powers to Tatooine so you can find the Mandalorian. And so baby Grogu had the chainmail and went with the Mandalorian. And so that means that the sequel films are canon. Unless something happens in Mandalorian 3 where Grogu decides to go back to being a... Who knows? Who knows? But that would mean that if... I'm kind of pissed off by it, too, because that would mean that, like... You know, they set this whole hype up for fans of, like... You know, it's maybe it's Filoni's middle finger to Kathleen Kennedy's camp, because there's that civil war sort of happening in Disney and the Star Wars, you know, the production staff, where it's like he's making better stuff than what she did, and that's his middle finger of like, I have a chance and I could if I wanted to, but I like to keep my job, that I could cancel out your films as fan fiction, and they do not matter as canon in Star Wars. And maybe that was his point to make that there, to really get Star Wars fans maybe to say something, that if you really hate these sequel films so much, we can do something about it. I don't know. But the fact that option was there, it pisses me off, because it's just like the dangling fruit of like, this is what you guys really, really want, but apparently I can't give it to you, so baby Yoda's going to go back to Mandalorian. And with him going back, the only thing he did was, like, sort of disturbed, like, one of the big, like, robot mechs. He didn't do much.
Yeah, he did that one thing where he, like, used the force on it, and he, like, removed a screw from it, and it hit him in the head or something.
Yeah, that was it!
And they were like, it's okay, Baby Yoda, and then he just kind of sat there for the rest.
We really didn't need Baby Yoda. We didn't. He could have been a Jedi, and I would have been perfectly fine with that. And now, of course, everyone would have been celebrating that those sequel films would have never existed. And they don't count for anything.
Well, the problem is they can't keep the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda apart for season 3, because that's the reason.
Yeah, there's also that too, yeah.
Because that was the breakout character of that show. That's why, like, women watch the show, for instance, because they love Baby Yoda.
And they're going to be... Yeah, and they're going to be like, you know, they got to have their Baby Yoda with the Mandalorian show, because it wouldn't match. So then, yeah, there's that too. I don't know.
But yeah, basically, what they have been doing is gradually incorporating elements of the expanded universe back in after having wiped them out. Because you do have characters like that, like in Boba Fett, you have that bounty hunter. Cad Bane shows up in Clone Wars, and you know, in Mandalorian season 2, I believe that Ahsoka mentions Thawne, which was a character that was in Star Wars novels and comics in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, and I think this character was also in one of the animated series, like Star Wars Rebels or Resistance or something.
You talking about Cad Bane?
No, Cad Bane was in Clone Wars, and yeah, he was in Rebels too. But then also on was in one of those as well, which is like another you know, blue alien guy. But some sort of, you know, he was like some powerful guy in the Empire after after Vader. Because they have these various different Sith Lords that they brought on and after Vader was gone. Like in the comics, the Marvel comics that were published right after Return of the Jedi, they kind of had to decide what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I just recently finished reading them. They had a character called Lumaya that was like some sort of female Dark Lord that they came along after Vader. And she was like formerly with the Rebels, but she was a spy, and then Luke shot her. And then she had to become, cybernetic like Vader, and mm-hmm. wear a suit to stay alive and stuff. And, so she can use the dark side of the Force as well. But the thing is, like, they had a lot of things that they developed after that are just kind of ignored. Like, Luke had a pupil called Kiro, who was some sort of fish guy that was going to learn the Force from him. And that character has not been brought back in or anything. I don't know to what extent, you know, how much of this stuff they're going to bring back. I mean, I understand that some of it would contradict the new movies, and I don't think that Disney is going to let them fully invalidate them. I mean, they'll allow them to sort of bring in other elements that were there before, mm-hmm. but it won't really do it if it's going to contradict the new trilogy, because they put so much money into that new trilogy. I mean, they're not really doing anything with it now, I guess. Like, all the new stuff is kind of separate from it, but I also don't think they're going to totally like discount it, because they would be seen as like backing down to the haters or whatever. You know, there's a lot of people who were like big defenders of The Last Jedi and claim that whoever played Rose Tico was like bullied off social media and all this kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
You know how it became a big culture war thing, and I don't think Disney wants to be seen as like, you know, surrendering to the haters of The Last Jedi who are toxic or whatever.
We hate Last Jedi because it's not a good movie, not because there's some Asian chick in there that doesn't know what her role is based on how the writers wrote that movie. But a sane person would think that way. However, there's these literal, like, basement dwellers that get pissed off and attack. They attack actors, and like, you know, the kid that played Anakin in the first film. There was no reason to like hate that kid. Like, he's just an actor, but the fact that he went years with people just like, oh, you know, like Phantom Menace was a piece of shit. You know, how dare you? That movie sucked. You know, and it's just like, I'm just playing a kid in a Star Wars movie. Like, I want to live a normal life.
Yeah, my understanding is they like ruined his life or something.
It did ruin his acting career, because he didn't do much after that.
Yeah.
And he was already in like Sixth Sense and some other like movies in the 90s that he did very well in.
Yeah, he's not even like bad. You know, it's an issue of the story more than what he did himself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
With that movie, I mean, with what material he was given, it was fine. Just a cute kid, you know.
Yeah, it was a fun kids movie instead of a serious Star Wars movie. Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been weird. There's things about the prequels that are just, you know, they're just strange, and it sort of rubs you the wrong way. Yeah. Like the idea that this fun-loving little kid who built C-3PO. And loves the pod race, becomes Vader. It is just strange, but you know, at the same time, when I saw it, I was 6 years old. I loved it, so whatever, right? It was like a fun kids movie.
Yeah,
funny Cooper Banks, haha. You know what? If you're in the right generation or whatever, it's very nostalgic. But yeah, you know, you look back on it and it's like, why did they make some of these choices? I don't know. But whatever, it happened. It's not the kid's fault. It's not. Actor played Jar Jar's fault. It's George Lucas's fault. But
yeah, I mean, and for a kids' movie, it's a great kids' movie. I mean, essentially, everyone. I went and saw that film four times that summer. and watched it a bunch of times at friends' house and stuff like that when we had it on VHS, when it came out on video. Like, we, everyone, like, in a sense, like, you know, people online are, you know, they want to rant, but then other people are kind of like, come on, y'all, you know who you are. You love that movie. Be honest with yourself. And
yeah,
yeah, everyone loved that movie. And then eventually it was just kind of like, I think by the second time, by the time Attack of the Clones came out, then people were like, all of a sudden it's like, it's cool to hate on Phantom Menace because it's that bad. And Attack of the Clones is way better. And I mean, I only saw Attack of the Clones one time in theaters. I have not seen it again.
Yeah, I have to say about the Phantom Menace, it's true. I mean, it was very popular with kids when I saw it. I was in my kindergarten.
Yeah, yeah.
First grade, probably. And but then over time, you know, it did become, like, embarrassing, right? Like, as you grow up, you kind of want to, like, oh, yeah, that movie was stupid. Jar Jar Binks is stupid. But then there was this one kid that was, like, really into it still. And this was, like, at the time that, like, Revenge of the Sith was coming out.
Yeah.
And he was still saying, Misa, Jar Jar Binks! And people just relentlessly mocked this kid and harassed him because he was just too into the Phantom Menace. And he was, like, 12 years old. And everyone else was like, all right, kid, it's, like, 6 years later. Like, you still doing the Jar Jar Binks voice? Like, maybe time to grow up a little bit?
Yeah.
And we would get cruel towards him. I never did this, but others would go to the fire alarm and pretend to pull it because he had a fire at his house. And they would try to torment him, like, there's going to be another fire. But it was mainly because he was so into Jar Jar Binks. So he kind of had it coming because he kept doing the stupid voice even though he knew everyone hated it.
Oh, gosh. The joys of youth and picking on other people that annoy you. But okay, so yeah, after that whole tangent on Boba Fett, anything really by Filoni is really, really solid. I mean, and it's essentially like Book of Boba Fett is also the Mandalorian season 2.5.
Oh yeah,
because like those like the episodes 5 and 6, he just shows up, and then it's just the Mandalorian the entire time.
Yeah, I have to say this show is really weird. The pacing, is,
yeah.
The first episodes are Boba Fett, but they keep jumping back and forth between his past and present, and so they've all this stuff about him.
Yeah,
like he was a slave, and then. Then you cut between that and him as the daimyo, as they call him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's sort of this like benevolent feudal lord, which is a really strange characterization. But
yeah, he's just kind of like, I'm giving up bounty hunting to become a slumlord on a desert planet. I think that's a pretty good life to have. But I mean, it was interesting because like it does tie in the like sort of what he's been doing between. You know, Return of the Jedi and, you know, and The Mandalorian in the second season. Because it was always the joke, I remember like in Welcome to Eltingville where they were like having the debate if Boba Fett's dead. And then like, you know, they're in the comic book shop and it's just like, face it, Pete, he's dead. He fell in the Sarlacc pit. And he's just like, you know, his friend Pete is like, show me the body. If there's no body, there's no death. He's still alive. I know he's still alive. And they're having that discussion 20, 30 years ago if Boba Fett's dead.
It's obvious Boba Fett's dead, Pete. The Sarlacc belched. It ate him.
Show me the body. No body, no death. Just like Freddy Krueger, Dr. Doom.
Yeah, well, technically he was revealed to not be dead within like few months, because the Marvel comics, like right after they adapted Return of the Jedi, they did a story that revealed that he did get out of the Sarlacc pit and survive. But then they didn't use him again after that story in the comics. So
yeah,
it wasn't really clear, you know, what he was up to after that. But but those were canon until Disney bought Star Wars. So so I'm not too bothered. Like this isn't like a big retcon because you know this is something that was decided in the 80s that he didn't really die. And I'm sure Lucas gave them approval, like, yeah, you can have him live, because, I mean, I've already killed off Vader for you. I can't kill off the next biggest thing behind Vader and the Emperor, you know. I guess Boba Fett's probably the most popular Star Wars villain after after those two, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the only other one that would compete would probably be Jabba the Hutt.
People have loved Boba Fett for years. He was just a really cool guy. Bane Cain is like, because I think like last week when how that episode ended with episode 6 with him coming by and gunning down the marshal. I remember just spending time on like Wikipedia, just reading a bunch of stuff about like Star Wars lore for like a day at work, and I was just like, holy crap, this guy sounds really cool. Because like, apparently in Clone Wars, it was like, you know, they go to some prison and he's like, oh, I've broken out of here before. Like, it's nothing. And, and he's basically kind of modeled after Lee Van Cleef and The Good and the Bad and the Ugly with the hat and everything. As like an actual gunslinger mercenary, which is really awesome. He's a Filoni character, so he's going to stay within that universe of his creations. So it's kind of like, yeah, so they've already officially killed him off, even though he was in Clone Wars, so that kind of gives him an ending there to his character.
I definitely recommend that you watch Clone Wars and Bad Batch.
There's like people that go online and are like, here's the chronological order, proper way to watch Clone Wars. And like, so it's like, if I'm going to do it, I might as well do it that way, so then stuff sort of makes sense.
You can do that, but you don't really need to. I mean, they're not that out of order as far as I can recall. I mean, basically, I think I watched it in production order, and I didn't really notice any continuity errors, but it is probably better to watch it that way, in chronological order, because I think there was an official listing on StarWars.com at some point of the chronological order, and that is the way it aired in syndication when they aired it on local channels and stuff in the early 2010s after Virgin Network stopped airing it. I remember it was pretty weird. They had it on Adult Swim. Once Toonami came back, they aired it for a year or two, and they were also airing it in syndication. So it was airing on, it was on like the CW or some other local channel like that on Saturday nights. And then like an hour later or something, it was on Toonami as well. So that was a weird time. But, you know, now I don't think it airs in syndication anywhere, but maybe some markets still have it.
I mean, it's on streaming services, so then I would have to like watch it on Disney Plus or something.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. Okay. Disney probably doesn't want it syndicating. They probably just want it on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I do appreciate that Disney has put so many Star Wars things on Disney Plus. They've got the original Boba Fett short on there. I watched that on there the other day from the holiday special. Real weird animation. And, totally different characterization of Boba Fett. It is interesting to see, but it's just like, it doesn't even feel like the same character as the movies. Because they portray him as being like a good guy, and then at the end they reveal that he's working for Vader. And it's not really mentioned of him being like a independent bounty hunter or working for a job or anything like that. It's kind of like a prototype of the character, because like they just kind of slapped that holiday special together, you know? And it must be like, that's the only thing that they care about, because like at Disney, because when I watched the Riff Tracks version of the holiday special not too long ago, they cut that section out of the movie, and they also cut out the section with Jefferson Starship playing. So I think they didn't want Disney to copyright strike them, and they didn't want it to pay song royalties to Starship, so they just removed those two parts from the in the special, even though they did riff like the commercials and stuff, which like half of the commercials are for like underwear. it's the same copy that I have it on DVD, but you know, I had to cut it in
I have like a bootleg DVD of it that I bought at the Collector's Marketplace years ago. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's never an official DVD.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think. Yeah, so there's like the focus on the like the Pike Syndicate running Spice, which is like this really main drug known in the galaxy or something, and the Pike Syndicate has been around for ages and ages in the Star Wars universe from what I gathered.
Yeah, this is like Doom with all the Spice stuff.
Yeah. Well, okay, so is the Pike Syndicate the same syndicate that Darth Maul is part of?
Yeah, I think so. Did they mention that in Solo?
Well, I mean, when we talked about Solo, when I saw it in theaters, like it was he showed up and he had like robot legs, and I was like, "Wait, he's alive?" And then you're like, "Yeah, I mean, if he keep up with Star Wars Clone Wars," I'm like, "No, John, I don't. I'm a regular dude that just showed up to the theaters." So like to me, Star Wars canon is just the movies, and you know, I haven't paid attention to anything else.
Yeah.
But then I know that, like, you know, Vader's in, like, the Star Wars Clone Wars series and Rebels or whatever else. Yeah, so.
But, yeah, anyway, I think that's probably the case. I mean, I just remembering that in Solo, he was working for some sort of criminal syndicate, right? Mm-hmm. And that girl that Solo was with, she was, like, sick working for him.
But I don't know if that was part of the Pike Syndicate. I really. I think it is because when I look up the Pike Syndicate, it refers to the mining riot that happens in that movie. On the Kessel or planet Kessel or something like that. So that's apparently owned by the Pike Syndicate.
I'm pretty sure by this point in the Star Wars timeline, Darth Maul is dead, but I'm not totally sure about that. Yeah, I believe he gets killed off in Star Wars Rebels, which is set before this.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway, they do have all this stuff with the, there's like these, Boba Fett's having to deal with like people that are like price gouging on water. He's just like, he's portrayed as this like, I don't know, benevolent king who's like price fixing things and like.
He's like helping, an Italian mobster in space.
He's like helping the locals that can't afford water, he like employs them to be his bodyguards or something.
Yeah.
He becomes like an animal tamer and he's like helping the Rancor and stuff.
Okay, now that was badass of him riding the Rancor in the city. You can't tell me that wasn't badass, because that was.
Well, yeah, that is when it paid off.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. He's like Mando, distract the robots. I gotta go get a thing. I'll be right back. And then, like, 10 minutes later.
The first few episodes, it's like him, you know, all benevolent and stuff. And he's like, he goes to see the dead Tusken Raiders and mourns them and, you know, all this stuff. And then, like, people keep coming to him and he's got this, this woman who's with him who's played by the woman who played Agent May on S.H.I.E.L.D.
The Asian chick, always, right?
Yeah.
She was supposedly killed off in the first season. Because I had to go back to that episode and watch it. I was like, okay, yeah, because they make the Mandalorian theme like when an explosion happens off in the distance in the desert. And I was like, and he goes and investigates, but then it's like, oh, that's relating to when he's with them trying to take out the assassin chick and the guy double crosses him. To get Baby Yoda. So that was that episode. So then it ties that together and he goes to like cyborg Mr. Fix-It guy and he fixes her up and now she's an android cyborg assassin chick. And so then they're going to go and get Fett's vet out of the at a jobless place after it's been sitting in there for months. And then and of course he gets that, does a couple of things. Oh, so my question on my other question on the whole on Boba Fett was, okay, so Mandalorian has the Naboo Starfighter. Now, where do you think he got that from? Did it come from Anakin?
I don't know. They just found it or something. Yeah, didn't really explain.
I don't remember if he came to Tatooine in those prequel films in the Starfighter.
Well. You know, I'm not sure if they ever specify where it ended up. And, mm-hmm. I don't think it's done after episode one, is it?
Well, I know he. I know, like in Revenge of the Sith, it was like he went to Naboo for something, or not Naboo, Tatooine. And I don't know if he took the Starfighter with him, because again, that was one movie I only saw in theaters once, and that was it.
That might have been in. That might have been in the second one. I don't know. Two and three kind of blend together.
Okay.
But in one of them, he goes there and he finds out that the Tusken Raiders killed his mother, and
that's it.
And then he kills all of them.
Yeah.
But they're not really, like, talking about, like, his spaceship or whatever, you know? So, like, at this point, he's using, like, a standard, like, you know, Republic-issued, like,
okay.
space cruiser. Not using his old pod racer.
Okay.
But, okay. At least I think that's what he uses. I don't remember exactly, but, yeah. I mean, it was probably, like, sized for him when he was younger, right?
No. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe he, like, flew over there to see his mom one time and then decided to leave it in case, like, he needed a backup ship. I mean, who knows? I mean...
Yeah.
But it was cool. Yeah. It is cool that, like, that's Mando's new ride now.
They showed that, like, the fence he knocked over was still down or something. I don't know, like,
he goes through Beggar's Canyon, and, like, that's where the pod racing was, and Josh pointed out, like, hey, you know, 30, 40 years into the Star Wars timeline, and they never fixed that fence that Anakin broke. Or, like, that barrier or whatever. And they just kind of left it there, because, like, no one goes down that area, apparently, on Tatooine. So, maybe, that was a nice nod.
Yeah. People, I guess, really noticed that kind of stuff. I know Josh was into the, pod racing game for N64. They probably have some reenactment of that scene in the game or something.
I think they do. I mean, Limited Run put out the pod racing game last summer, and I got it, and I played a little bit of that after not playing it since the N64 in 99 or 2000 or whatever, because a bunch of my friends, like, in middle school, we played the heck out of that game.
Yeah, I have Mario Kart 64 and Mario Kart for SNES, and...
Yeah.
Diddy Kong Racing for N64, but I don't have Pod Racing before.
It's a pretty solid fun game.
Yeah, I've heard it's like probably the best thing that came out of episode one. Like, people really like it.
Yeah. There's also so they had like the, I mean, I know they used the same engine, but they had like the Star Wars Battle for Naboo game, which is basically Star Wars Rogue Squadron, but reskinned to have Naboo aircraft in it. So that was... because I played the heck out of Star Wars Rogue Squadron on the N64. And there was, like, all these cheat codes where, like, you could unlock the Millennium Falcon. You can unlock a Cadillac and fly a Cadillac car into space. Like in Tim Zaris. You just
lock your car with your head sticking out the window. Yeah.
It was like a cheat code in Nintendo Power, like you can unlock a Cadillac and you can just fly around in a Cadillac in space. Cause yeah. It was made by LucasArts, and you know, those people don't care. Like, this is a fun game for kids. Like, let's have them unlock stuff during like cheat code or like, you know, passwords or like, you know, button mashes and stuff combinations to unlock extra ships. So like, you have like the cool stuff like the TIE Interceptor, and like the biggest, one of the biggest things was like, you can get the Millennium Falcon or a Cadillac in space that shoots lasers.
Yeah. Very Star Wars, the Cadillac.
Yeah. The Cornelia made Cadillac. I don't know. The first four episodes of Book of Boba Fett is really solid, because I kind of like the... It was sort of anticipating, like, with the story regarding... You're getting chunks out of, like, what Boba Fett's been doing since episode 6. And, you know, how did he get, you know, what was he doing, like, with him getting out of the Sarlacc pit and surviving? And kind of between then and then, of course, the last season of Mandalorian. And so that kind of is there to fill in gaps, but then also it's showing kind of, like, what he's progressing to do on that planet and being, like, a warlord to take over Jabba the Hutt's position after he blew up. Or he got choked by Princess Leia, and then blew up.
Yeah, there's really no bringing him back.
Yeah. Well, what was it? Like, it was just interesting how in the first episode they had, like, his, what was it, his cousins? Are they called the twins? So you have, like, all these, like, skinny-looking Indian people carrying, like, these two huts on, like, a bending platform that looks like it's about to break under its own weight. And they're hauling them through town so they can talk to Boba Fett.
Oh, these are the guys that try to send the Wookiee assassin after Boba Fett, but then...
The Wookiee assassin was with them originally, I believe. But, like, this is, like, the first episode where they're like, oh, you killed our brother or our cousin. We need to go after you, Boba Fett, or whatever. And I'm just like... I mean, you just see the curvature on that piece of plywood they're sitting on. And I'm like, I hope that thing breaks because that's going to be so funny.
Yeah. Well, after they use the assassin and he fails, Boba Fett starts employing him. But then those guys, they're just kind of like, well, that's the best we can do. And they just kind of leave.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, watch out for the other guilds, but we're out of here.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're going to do another season of Book of Boba Fett or if that's just kind of handled on its own. Like, that's where Boba Fett's at. Like, that's probably all we need to know about him. And what he's doing, and
I think he'll be in Mandalorian season 3.
And then Boba Fett could take over Mandalorian season 3, and we can call it Book of Boba Fett season 1.5.
And then they are making this Obi-Wan Kenobi show as well. And I don't know how much that's going to relate to these other shows or if it's going to be kind of its own.
Yeah. Well, Obi-Wan Kenobi was in Rebels, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of wondering what they would adapt out of that into the Obi-Wan Kenobi show.
Not in Rebels. He's not in Rebels. Sorry. I thought you meant Clone Wars.
Oh.
I don't think Obi-Wan appears in Rebels, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
If he does, it's only, you know, briefly in, like, a flashback or something.
I know I say this because there's... someone made a really, like, a tribute AMV to, like, Darth Maul at the Anime Weekend Atlanta Pro competition. And they spliced in a bunch of stuff to kind of piece together a story, but... It does conclude with old Ben and Darth Maul on, like, Tatooine having their final battle. And Obi-Wan kills him, apparently. And I would just assume that's either from Rebels. Maybe it's from Clone Wars.
You might be right. It probably is Rebels.
Okay.
And the thing is, Rebels and Clone Wars, they kind of blend together to me because they carry over a lot of the plots from one to the other.
When
Clone Wars got canceled. Because, like, Ahsoka continues to appear in Rebels. Darth Maul plot that was started in Clone Wars and then carried over to Rebels. You know, they did a lot of good stuff in those shows, but and I really enjoyed Bad Batch. That's good as well.
Okay,
it's another follow up to Clone Wars because they did this like extra season of Clone Wars after all these years, like that came out a couple of years ago.
I think I saw like one episode of that or something. I was at my friend's house and he's like, "This is really good."
Yeah, it was aborted by Cartoon Network before they could do the final season because Disney bought out and all that stuff happened.
Yeah.
But, the last four episodes or so, I think, were, like, direct tie-in with the Sith movie. And then before that, they had another arc which introduced the Bad Batch characters who are, like, these...
The one that I saw. They had the Bad Batch in there, and then they had their own series, like, a year or so later.
Yeah. The clones, they've all got their own, like, personalities and skills and stuff, but they're voiced by the same guy, which I only found out, like, near the end of watching the show. And I thought that was pretty incredible that he could do, like, all those different voices.
Huh.
You know, usually if somebody is doing, like, five characters or something, it's going to be, like, a Jim Carrey in, like, A Christmas Carol or something, where he's just, like, hamming it up with a bunch of different corny performances. But this guy actually tried to, like, make a bunch of personalities for each character and have them each have a distinct voice while also sort of being based on the same, I guess, gruff soldier template.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to do that. I think it was D. Bradley Bader or something like that. The voice actor.
Well, we're over 2 hours in this recording. I don't know if we have anything more to say. I don't know. I can't really think of anything else to say in Boba Fett other than people need to check it out.
Going to war with Russia, I think that's the only thing we haven't touched on. Hopefully that we don't have like a nuclear explosion before this episode gets released.
Otherwise, it's going to be lost to time because of how slow I edit stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe if I know, like a nuclear missile's coming, I can at least put it on the web and be like, there's no time to edit it. A missile's going to be here in 5 minutes, and I'm putting this out there as our final podcast episode.
The world can see what was happening right before it ended.
Yeah.
If anyone survives.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I get the sense that Biden would not, actually do anything if Russia invaded Ukraine. I mean, I just don't see him as being a particularly strong president.
No, he's not gonna do anything because Obama didn't do anything.
Right.
And you know what? We all watched and said, "Why should we care?" Yeah. And half of Ukraine wants Russia to control him anyways, so just give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, they did vote in Donetsk and Luhansk years ago to join Russia, and Russia turned them down. They should have probably just absorbed them then, like they did with Crimea, and it would have spared those regions years of being shelled by the Ukrainian government.
Yeah,
because then they wouldn't have the protection of Russia.
Well, I mean, the news is the media is so state run; it's a joke. But they're like, "Oh, you know, this is gonna, you know, this is affecting the oil prices," and I'm like, "How much of our oil are we getting from Ukraine? We're supposed to be getting all of it from the freaking Saudis in the Middle East." Like,
well, the problem is Biden is like terrible on energy, so he won't let us use our own energy. He's put all these moratoriums on things like drilling on federal land and on the Keystone Pipeline. So yeah. Prices have gone up a ton because he's restricted the supply so much.
Yeah,
and then with Saudi, we've got this whole thing where they killed that journalist. And so Biden wants to kind of distance himself from that. And he doesn't like that Prince Mohammed bin Salman and was like friends with Jared Kushner and stuff. So, he's kind of not on great terms with the Saudis either. And, you know, it's just like, you know, he's not really on good terms with the main people that we get oil from. So I wouldn't be surprised if OPEC is like screwing us because of that. And that plays a role.
Yeah,
the prices go up too, and so it's just like as long as he's in there, the oil prices are going to keep going up, and he's probably going to like be ineffectual in the way he communicates with Russia and make them think like you can just go in consequence free, and then they will, and then he's going to issue like some sanctions or whatever so that we can't trade oil with Russia and Ukraine. And then,
so what? Yeah,
and then it's going to go up even further. But he won't be able to do anything to resolve the actual situation in the same way that nothing has been done to resolve the situation with them being in Crimea.
Yeah.
They're just going to be there, and we're going to kind of like put our foot down and complain about it, and nothing will, hopefully nothing will happen. I mean, I guess the worst scenario is that they like mobilize all of NATO and get into like a war in Ukraine, and then there's like a nuclear war with Russia or something.
Oh, but, gosh.
You know, I think it's just going to be like, people are going to be suffering more than more at the pump. Then Biden is going to get fucked in the midterms, and then even harder in 2024. He'll probably lose to DeSantis or something,
or Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson, yeah, it could happen.
That's a pipe dream. I don't know.
I mean, they say he doesn't want to run. I mean, who could blame him if he doesn't want to run? They'd ruin his life if he did. Like, they would.
Yeah,
Trump, you know, he'd be under constant attack, and as soon as he gets out of office, they'd ban him from social media. And
all this
stuff. Trump, he does well being at Fox. I think he's going to stay there. You know, he's got a fat paycheck. He's got a, you know, a better life there than he would in the White House.
That's true.
All right. Well, enjoy this episode if the world is still around, and. We'll talk to you soon.
Stardate February 13th, 2022. just as a footnote of this could be our, this probably won't be our last communication. I don't know.
This is our Valentine to the audience.
Yeah, hopefully we're still alive past Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so tomorrow is going to be like the Valentine's Day massacre of the planet, and like Biden and people and guys are nuking each other.
Well, we gotta wait. Okay, we at least have the Super Bowl tomorrow before they nuke a planet. That's my only constituent there. Let's let the Bengals beat the Rams, because I'm pulling for the Bengals. I don't want to say that because then the last time I wanted to predict that, you know, whoever's going to win the Super Bowl, they didn't. And I think I was like, oh yeah, the Panthers got the Broncos, and then the Broncos destroyed them, and I was like, I'll never do that again. So, anyways, yeah. So take it easy, guys. We'll hopefully see you. We'll see you next time, for sure. So. Later.
Kuzumo Zespa in my DeLorean. War's over, I'm a pizza Mandalorian. Story is dumb, Star Wars historians. Deep in debate, but they play at Benegans. Rhyme renegade, show to penetrate. First and second defense, I won't hesitate. Got a job to do with Darth, the guy that delegates. Got something against Skywalker, someone he really hates. I don't give a fuck, I'm after Solo. For all I carry, could be hiding at Yoda's dojo. Gotta make the money, credit's no good. When the Jawas run a shop in your neighborhood. Think you can cook, I got a grappling hook. Let's make this quick, cause I'm really booked. I'm a devious, degenerate defender of the devil. Shutting all the trash compactors on the detention level. My backpack.